is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. And the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth, and Ham is the father of Canaan. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them the whole earth overspread. And Noah began to be a husbandman, and he planted a vineyard, and he drank of the wine and was drunk, and he was uncovered within his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father, and told his two brethren without. And Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. And their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. And Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done to him. And he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. And he said, blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. And all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. That's a whole bunch in this chapter. Let's see what we can do with it. Okay? In the ninth chapter, first verse, and Elohim blessed Noah and his sons. Okay? Elohim did the blessing. And said to them, be fruitful, or literally bear fruit, and increase. Now, here comes a word. What's that next word? The word replenish is not there. It's something somebody's made in there. If you take this language literally, replenish would mean to do it again. Correct? The word's not there. The language says fill the earth. It does not say replenish. That takes your mind into another context. If that little word's R-E is on the front of that word, it makes it sound like it's already been done before and you're doing it again. And that's not the context of the words here. The word here does not say that. It says fill the earth. And that does change the meaning, doesn't it? So, and fill the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every living thing of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, and upon everything that crawls upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the earth, and upon all and of the sea, the fishes of the sea, into your hand are they given. I'll address that in just a second. Every reptile, excuse me, I'm trying to read my writing. Every reptile that lives shall be what? Food for you, even as the green herb that I have given you, all things. Have I given you all? The word things in there, but mean context is there. So look what he said. What was you allowed to eat then? See, the law said you couldn't, but look here, from the beginning it was not so, was it? Everything that God had created, herb and animal, you could eat. True? That's what he said. See? He said, I'll give you the herb, now I'm giving you the meat to eat too. And the law hasn't come into effect yet, has it? So guess what? Some people better go back and study their book, because he says you can have anything you want to eat from the very beginning. He said, but flesh or food with the life in it, which is the blood there in it, shall you not eat. Okay? Now, what's it saying? Only flesh with the life in it or the blood in it you can't eat. What's he saying? Don't eat the flesh with the blood in it. What's he saying? No, it's not. It's any animal. It has to be bled out. You're not to eat the blood of it. What's the blood symbol of? It's the life or death. It can be life or death, but it says the blood is the life. But wasn't his blood that was shed for us, and it was laid out for us, so we're not to take of any other blood other than what blood? Christ's blood. That's the only blood we're to take of, not the blood of a beast. Okay? We're not to take that. Don't take on that beast nature, the life of the beast, if you take of that blood. He said, and surely your blood of your lives will I require it, the hand of every beast will I require it, and the hand of Adam, and at the hand of every man's brother will require the life of Adam. If you kill somebody, what you going to get? So your life's going to be required, as he's saying here. And that goes right to the heart of the whole thing. Under the law, you have all those rules and regulations, do and don't do, correct? What's the rule and regulation he's putting in effect right here? God is not mocked. Man will reap what he sows. Isn't that what he's saying? If you kill somebody, your life will be required, correct? Okay, so that's reaping and sowing. So when the law came in, they got all these other rules and regulations, but when the law was fulfilled in Christ, guess what? Now we're back to where we started before. God is not mocked. Man will reap what he sows. Okay? That's the way it started. He said, whoever sheds Adam's blood, by Adam shall his blood be shed. That's what the language says. Because in the image of Elohim made he what? Adam. And you be what? Be fruitful or bear fruit and increase. And bring forth abundantly where? In the earth, not on the earth. He wants you to bear fruit in your earth. Does that mean, you think he's really talking about having babies? He's talking about the birth of Christ within you, right? That's what he's talking about, raising up the Christ within you. And do what? Increase in it. So he wants you to raise the Christ in you and increase in it. Isn't it a daily walk? Isn't it a progressive walk that we walk in? Everything we do, we don't just snap our fingers and we're there, do we? It's a progression of what we do. What we learn today lays the foundation for tomorrow. Is that correct? So all the tests and temptations, you walk through them, and every one you walk through today prepares the ground for you to sow the seed in it tomorrow, right? Okay. And God, Elohim, spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying... Now, the first two words in this chapter, verse 9, you can scratch them out because they're not there. They're added words. Just should start out and say, behold, I establish... or I confirm my covenant with you and with your seed after you. Do you hear what he's saying? He didn't say, and I twice. He just said, behold, I establish my covenant with you and your seed after you. Now tell me who did it. Who established the covenant? Did he say you had to do anything to establish this covenant? Well, then why are we trying to do? Why are we trying to do so many things when God did not ask us from the very beginning? He's never asked us to do anything but to love Him and keep His commandments. Is that right? They try to fall back in that religious mindset and try to get you to do this and do this and do this. If they can make you, if you can make a seal jump through a hoop, what do you call that seal? A trained seal. And if they can get you to jump through the religious hoop of doing all them things, they can call you a trained seal. Because you're doing exactly what they want you to do. You have no thought process of your own. See? trained hypocrite, same thing. You know. So the thing of it is, we've got to learn to think for ourselves. I'm not telling you to think like Dave. I'm telling you to think like God made you to think. You've got to think the way you think. And you know, we may not think exactly alike, but if we really get together and honestly seek the truth, tell me what you're going to find, Bob. If you really get together, two people or three or however many, and really seeking the truth, what are you going to find?
You're going to find pertinent information.
You're going to find that pertinent information that takes it to the truth. And it's not about you being right or me being right. It's about the truth. If you find that truth, the truth will what? It will set you free. See? And isn't that what it's all about? He came to take captivity captive and set us free. And if we understand the knowledge that Jesus had in his mind, do you realize what you would be? There's no more boundaries. There's no more limitations. There's no restrictions to anything in your life. And now I'm not saying you won't have trouble. Excuse me, that's not the pattern. He had more trouble than anybody else in the world. But he did not let it change his course, did he? There's the key. When you know the truth, you're going to have plenty of opposition, but you're going to have so much confidence in who you are and what you are that the opposition will do nothing but encourage you to go on. See, they're an encouragement. When they think they're coming against you to stop you, they're encouraging you. That's a wonderful thing. Sure. He stood on the word, regardless of what the opposition was. See, stood right on it. Okay? Now, he said, "Behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you." Who's he talking about? He's talking to Abraham and his seed. Now, you notice he didn't say it plural either. Excuse me, Noah. Same thing. It's Abraham's seed coming through. It's all the way through. But yeah, it's the seed of man, but not all men. Okay, this is a certain seed. It's a genealogy that's in this book shows you it comes. There was a lot of people that wasn't in the genealogy, right? But now the whole earth from the time of Noah, who's he talking about? From the time of Noah on, who's he talking about? Because no, well, look here, I'm trying to say something here again. He said that the whole earth would be overshadowed with the seed of Noah and his sons. So truly the covenant is with who? All of creation, all of humanity. Do they know it yet? You know, how long has it been since some of us knew it? We didn't know it at one time either, that God made a covenant with us. And until you come to the understanding that God made this covenant with you personally, what would you feel like if God said that came in here today and walked in a human form and sat down before you as God and said, "I'm going to make a covenant with you today"? You'd probably do double backflips and fall on the ground and melt, wouldn't you? But that's exactly what he's doing. It's exactly what he's doing. He's coming in individually to each one of you and saying, "I love you so much, I'm willing to make a covenant without your participation. I'm going to do it for you." Sure it is. Bringing it all back to you to remind you. He's trying to remind us. Put a new mind in us, okay? He says, "And with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl and the cattle and every beast, every living thing of the earth with you." That's all kinds of things in us, right? Beasts and fowls and creeping things. And from all that go out of the ark to every living thing of the earth. He made a covenant. He said, "I'm never going to flood you with the word and kill you again. I'm not going to flood you with this overwhelming word." Tell me what happens when someone who's not interesting and God has not called and some religious folk come up to them and jump on them about the word, what happens to them? They're overwhelmed by the flood that they're dumping out on them. How does that make you feel? If I see somebody do that to someone, it makes me sick in my stomach. This makes me sick inside. See? Because I know that they're killing the person. They're drowning them in things that they don't even desire. They were totally satisfied in Noah's day to sit out in the middle of the desert and live in those conditions, weren't they? And if God hadn't called Noah out, he'd have been the same way, wouldn't he? That's all they knew. And God will take care of all that. And again, when he said, I will establish, it was God speaking, right? Same as in Jeremiah 31, 31 through 33, and Hebrews 8, verse 9 through 13. That's the covenant. In Jeremiah, he was prophesying of the covenant through the prophet. And Hebrews, through the New Testament writer, he says, this is the covenant that the Holy Ghost was talking about back there. It is now in effect. Okay? And what does it say? The day will come when I will make a new covenant. Sounds like the same thing he said here, isn't it? Every covenant's been made. Man has never made a covenant with God. You show me in the book where man ever instituted a covenant with God. They didn't do it, did they? God instituted the covenants because he knew we couldn't, wouldn't, or whatever the reason, it's not going to happen between us and God unless God does it. He knew that. That's why he does it. And that puts all the responsibility on who? On God. God the Father. Okay? And he said, I'm going to, if you read the rest of Jeremiah and Hebrews there, I talked about Jeremiah 31, 31 through 33 and Hebrews 8, verse 9 through 13. If you read the last part of those covenants, do you remember what it says? And there will be no need for every man to say to his brother, know the Lord, because every man from the greatest to the least shall know me. That's a wonderful covenant. I don't have to worry about anybody because God's got it all under control. Oh, rest in Him. It gives you rest when you know the truth. And then He says in verse 11, I will establish my covenant with you. Again, who's doing it? He didn't say, I'll establish my covenant with you if you'll do three Hail Marys and two Our Fathers, did He? I mean, I'm just using that as an example. I'm not picking on the Catholics. I'm just saying all the things that the church tells you to do. Come in, sit in the front row, pay your tithes, go up here and cry on the board, slobber and snot around, and all these things they tell you to do. You got to be baptized in somebody's name, blah, 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 all these rules and regulations. Did God say any of that there? He said, I'm going to do it because I want to do it. Why did God make the covenant? Because He could. Just because He could and He desired to do it. It wasn't because anything in us that we had done that was good. It was because of Him and His goodness that He desired to make a covenant with us. And He says, I'll never do that bad thing to you again. He says, I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off anymore by the waters of the flood. I'm not going to overflood you anymore. And see, that's the purpose of Jesus coming. Jesus was the Word. And see, the flood came in the form of a natural flood, and it destroyed all but eight on the earth, didn't it? But yet when Jesus came, the Word and the water, and guess what? Did He flood anybody? He came and gently soaked into it. Didn't He? See, He didn't come in and just rip and snort and tear. He came in like a lion, like a lamb, not a lion. And He just came up and loved right into us. See, different picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just pour it into, you fill it up to the top. It wasn't a flood. See, it was not a flood. Absolutely. He said, neither shall there be any more a flood to destroy the earth. Thank God for that. And God said, this is the token or the rainbow. The token is the rainbow. This is the rainbow of the covenant which I make between me and you. Who made it? Who was it between? Between God and man. He said, between me and you. Right? God made this covenant between you and Him. You've got to see this on a personal basis. It's not about God doing it for everybody or somebody across the street. When you read this book, it's got to be personal, doesn't it? It's got to be for you. If it's for somebody else, what are you doing reading their mail? Huh? This is for you. But you've got to see it. If I don't believe it's for me, I just read like I'm reading somebody else's mail. Okay? He said that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. And it literally should say throughout the ages. For you throughout the ages. And look again at verse 13. I do set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be as a evidence or a proof of the covenant between me and the earth. Who made the covenant again? How many times does God have to say, I make the covenant before people believe it? See, they read that, I make the covenant, but then you still say, okay, God makes the covenant, but... That's billy goat religion.
Did you just say my rainbow?
It's rainbow is what it really is. The rainbow is the covenant. The word rainbow is what it should be.
Oh, you're adding that to it.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. That's what the language should say. Not bow, but should say rainbow. The rainbow is the covenant. How many colors is in that rainbow?
Seven.
No, but seven.
But
yeah. I know, but you see how many, though. Oh, that's... So anyway, there's seven colors. What does seven represent? Perfection or covenant of God. Okay.
Well, isn't that... if because he knew of their doubt and unbelief, he had to make a visual.
Had to make a visual for them to see because they couldn't identify with anything out of their minds. So he said, I set my rainbow in the clouds. And the word cloud here is not a regular, just a big white puffy cloud in the sky. It's a thunder cloud. Because, you know, you don't see rainbows when the sky is all white and puffy, do you? It literally says thunder cloud. Okay? And he said, between me for a token or a evidence or proof of the covenant between me and the earth, and it shall come to pass when I bring a thunder cloud over the earth, the rainbow shall be seen in the thundercloud. That's what it should say. Now, thunder. Talk to me about thunder. Okay. But natural, but spiritually, okay, spiritually the word thunder, the book says that every time that God spoke, there was two things heard. People who had the ears to hear heard God speak. And everyone else said they heard what?
Thunder.
So this is God's word being spoken here, and some of them are not hearing it, okay? At this time, how many people could possibly hear God's voice?
Noah.
Yeah.
Noah
was the only one at the time. Now, I want to show you something so you don't get in condemnation and guilt. Everybody does not hear God's voice right now. You show me anywhere in the Scriptures where everyone present heard God's voice. There's always some that hear and some who don't hear. But that's God's choice. It's nothing to feel guilty about. See? If God wants you to hear, He'll create your hearing ear and your seeing eye to see. It's not up to you. It's not up to me. We're just supposed to do what we're supposed to do, and then it's up to Him to keep that responsibility. Okay? So no condemnation or guilt. Okay, into verse 15, he says, and I will remember my covenant. He says, when I bring the cloud over the earth and the rainbow in that thunder cloud, that'll make me remember. And what will that do to God when he remembers? It'll make him make sure that the earth is never destroyed again by water, right? Never going to be flooded again. God doesn't want us to be flooded either. Okay? Which is between me and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy the flesh. So the word will not come to destroy, but it will come to reconcile and to heal. Correct? That's what God wants it to be now. And the rainbow shall be in the thundercloud, and I will what? And I will see it, and remember the what? The covenant for the ages. What the language says. The covenant for the ages. I'll remember the covenant I made. So every time God brings a storm on the earth, every time I see a thunderstorm and the clouds rolling and the big black dark clouds, you know what I'm going to think of now? What should you think of? I'm never going to be destroyed by the flood, but I'm going to say, here's God setting up it right now. Here comes the thundercloud, and in God's mind, you know what's there? I am. We're sitting under the cloud, aren't we? So he said, every time I see the cloud and the rainbow, he's going to remember his covenant with you. So you've got to see this. Every time there's a storm going out there, it ought to make the hair stand up on you, not because of the electrical charge, but because of what God said. He is thinking of you when that cloud comes over. You're in God's mind. He's thinking about you, the covenant He made with you, every time there's a storm comes through. Man, that's awesome. I love to sit outside in the rain. I mean, not just actually walk. I used to do it all the time. I was younger. I'd walk out in the rain. But I like to just sit on the porch and watch it rain. I don't care how hard it rains and the wind blows. I just love to sit outside. I don't like to be inside. I like to be outside and watch it rain. Hear it rain. I love it. Always have. But now I'm beginning to understand what drew me to that, because God is thinking about me at that very moment. He brooded over him. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he did. Still does. He said, And I remember the everlasting, or the covenant of the ages between God and every living creature upon all fleshes on the earth, and that God is Elohim. And Elohim said to Noah, this is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. Ooh. Who established the covenant? Elohim. Elohim. And the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth, and Ham is the father of Canaan. Now, we're going to get into another little section of this thing, which kind of changes the step, but it's a good one. The three sons, what would you think they are? Huh? They're the three covenants again. Remember, we talked about this before. The three sons are the three covenants, the three levels. Be right with you, just a minute. Okay. Now, what does Shem mean? It's the same as the word name, honor, nature, character. It's someone with renown, someone of notoriety. Ham means hot, heat, or something brown. And Japheth means opened or expansion. And Ham is the father of who? Canaan. What does Canaan represent? It says low land or people of low degree. People choose to live in the lower realms.
Ham doesn't mean the gathering of people?
Nope. Shem actually represents what? First covenant. See, first covenant. Second covenant is what? Ham, which is Pentecost, second one. Passover, Pentecost, and Japheth is tabernacles. Excuse me, I couldn't spit it out. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. Now notice that the son of Ham, which represents the Pentecostal experience, okay, what did he bring forth? But what does Canaan represent? The low degree. See? Flesh only begets flesh, doesn't it? Seed produces like kind. Till the seed comes to maturity, it's not going to produce a good fruit, is it? Okay? And Noah, which means rest, began to be a what? It says a husbandman. No. In verse 20 it says, And Noah began to be a husbandman, and he planted a vineyard. Now if you look at this word, husbandman, it doesn't say farmer. Like in the New Covenant it does. In the Greek language, the husbandman does mean farmer. Here it does not. You know what it really says? It's two words. It means mortal man. Now, he was a mortal man. He became a mortal man. Why did he become a mortal man? Huh? Well, that's what happens to mortal people, isn't it? They die. Mortal means liable to die. Okay? So this, he became a mortal man and he planted a vineyard. Now, tell me, what happened here? He just had the sufficiency of God to save him and his family from the flood that destroyed the whole earth. And as soon as he comes off, he starts scratching in the dirt for his sufficiency. You know, that's sad but funny to me. A man who God talked to, and instead of relying on God as his sufficiency, he went right back to the dust again and started scratching in the dust. Can anyone find anything here where he was told that he was supposed to plant a vineyard? He went right back to the dust realm. Mortal man. God didn't tell him to do it, but he did it. There's nothing that says that God told him. But he went back to his same old ways. Should have stayed on the ship. I guarantee he'd been better off stay there than, or went down with the ship or something, you know. Remember when he said he had a vineyard? He said he planted a vineyard. In Isaiah 5, let me read something to you out of Isaiah chapter 5. If I can get there real quick. Yeah, right here. Isaiah chapter 5, first few verses. He says, "Now I will sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My beloved has a vineyard and a very fruitful hill." And he said, "He fenced it, gathered out the stones thereof, planted it with the choicest vine and also a tower in the midst of it. Also made a wine press therein, and he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes," or stinking, poisonous berries. Okay? Didn't bring forth what was supposed to be brought forth. Do you think this is the same pattern? I do. He already had one, and Noah went and made his own. Isaiah said he's already got a vineyard in a very fruitful hill called Mount Zion. That's the tabernacle realm. And it says, he drank the wine and was drunk. He was drunken. And he was uncovered in his tent. Now, we can look at this in the natural and say, okay, a guy got drunk and got naked, and we can let it go at that, and we haven't learned a thing, have we? But how about let's uncover something else here? How about let's looking at what wine really is? What is wine? It's the revelation of the truth of God, isn't it? Isn't that what this is all about, understanding the revelation or the truth of God? Okay? So let's take this in here as the revelation and truth of God. And it says, and he drank or he partook of the revelation of God and become drunken. He got too much of a good thing, didn't he? He got too much of a good thing. You know what happens when people get drunk? They become uninhibited. They do things that they would never do when their mind is in control because of fear and fear of man and fear of all the things. But when they become drunk, they do things that they would not normally do, true or false. They become uninhibited. And Noah became uninhibited and he was uncovered or revealed within his tent. Now, if you want to think that this is that sheepskin tent that he was living in, you can. But I want to think that this is about when I really partake of the revelation of God, that it reveals me inside of the very tent that we live in. This thing we walk around in. Okay? Does that make sense to you? See? And he got revealed in here, and what he saw was not a good picture, was it? It was not a good picture. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers without. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness or the disgrace of his father and exposed it to the two brethren outside. And Shem and Japheth took a garment or a cover and laid it upon their shoulders. They took responsibility and covered him up. Okay, or concealed his disgrace of their father. And their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's disgrace. He took no responsibility to cover him. He exposed him. And the book says, if your brother falls, do what? Restore them in meekness. didn't take it the right way. Now watch. There's some bad things go on here that's not exposed until you get inside the language and see what it says. Okay? And 24 says, and Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his younger son had done to him. Now the words here are not exactly right. Noah should start out with just, Noah awoke from his wine and knew. There's a key word. If I'm drunk and I passed out on the floor right here in the midst of this room, right where we're at right now, if 1,000 people walked by me and I'm passed out drunk, would I know it? Then why would he say he awoke? Means he had to be what? Asleep. And knew what his young, not younger, but young son had done to him. What do you think he'd done to him? It was a homosexual relationship. He saw his nakedness. He said he knew what he had done to him. Looking upon him was not the disgrace. But he did something. He had a relationship sexually with Noah. There's the problem. And Noah knew it was wrong, didn't he? Whose responsibility was this escapade? It was Noah's. Noah did it. It was his responsibility.
He's still just inferring that because of Noah's drunkenness, but he's not.
But we know that.
The guy here in the DWI, he killed somebody, so, well, it wasn't me, I was drunk. That's the same thing.
Don't work, though, does it? And it didn't work here either. Noah's got the responsibility. He was the man of God, right? And no one told him to go get drunk. He got drunk, so he incurs whatever happened.
It was his responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But he had this relationship with him, and he said, cursed be Canaan. Now, explain this to me. Why is Canaan being cursed when Ham is the one that did it? Hello? You ever think about it? Canaan didn't do a thing, did he? Ham did it. And see, this was before the law. And then before the law, and this time here, you know, the seed, it would go through earlier in the, and even up under the law, the seed were cursed for so many generations behind it, wasn't it? But in the new covenant, every man stands for his own faults, don't he? And here, they were cursing the whole generation for so many generations behind him. He was cursing that generation or that genealogy. Because they were people of what? Low degree. He's talking about their thinking process. Not being stupid, but being very worldly in the lowest realm. He's not talking about the people themselves, but what? Their thinking process. And he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be to his brethren. And he said, blessed be Yahweh, okay? Yahweh Elohim of Shem and Canaan shall be his servant. He said, bless the Lord, the God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. Whose servant shall he be? Shem's servant, God's servant. And God shall enlarge Japheth, and he shall dwell in tents of Shem. And Canaan shall be his servant. The lowest realm is always going to be what? Servants. But I mean, this is a negative way of being a servant here. Wasn't by choice, was it? And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. Why did he say that? What was 350? You can go to the book of Revelation and get your answer. You can go in the New Testament, in the Gospels, and get your answer. There you go. There you go. Mike's right on the money. 350, right? And we could do it this way. 3 1/2, right? We could do it 1,700 and some many days. Like it talks about. How long did Jesus minister? 3.5 years. What's he talking about right there? And Noah lived after the flood 350 years. What is 3.5 years? What 350 years? What does it represent? It's a time of ministry. Noah's time of ministry was 350 years, the same as Jesus did 3.5 years. Whether it was 3.5 weeks, 3.5 months, whatever. It's the 3.5. It's a time of ministry. And so Noah's time was over. Sure he was. He was absolutely representative of the Melchizedek priesthood. Okay? A representative of. And all the days of Noah were 950 years and he died. Now what's that one talking about? The history book does us no good, does it? But this can tell you something. All the days of Noah, which means rest, were 950 years. You can take two words out of there and figure out what it means. Nine. What's nine? It's the fruit and gifts of what? 50. Jubilee or reconciliation. That's the fruit of reconciliation. Okay? Is a time of ministry. See, that's the fruit of reconciliation, is ministry. The time of ministry that God has set up, not what we decide to do. It's all what God wants done. That's the beautiful part about it. And I've shared this with you before. You know the most peaceful place in the world to be? Or let me say it this way. The most peaceful position to have in your life? You know what it is? It's learning and finding out that I have no control over anything or anyone. And whenever I find out that God is in control of all things, which automatically eliminates me controlling anything, then I can receive no condemnation or guilt, can I? And I can receive no credit or glory. I am just a servant. And when you find out that in your life, you can set in a realm of peace. I don't care what comes down, because we're not talking about the natural. We're talking about the inner part of man, the spirit of man. In my spirit, I can walk in peace when all hell is breaking loose on me. Did Jesus do it? Did he walk in peace through all that hell? Well, if he did it, I can too, and so can you. Because he said this, "Be ye perfect or mature as I am." If he could do it, he's saying, you can do it too. So when all the hell breaks loose, you can stand right in the midst of it because of what you know. It's the truth that you know that will set you free. That's the greatest place to stand in your life. It's not about all the physical things. I don't care whether diseases come or accidents happen, your legs get cut off, your arms get cut off, whatever. It's in your mind. It's in your mind. Why do you think there are some of these people that have no ability to walk? Some of them can barely do more than talk. Just like Christopher Reeve. He just died here recently. But you know, that man was not an unhappy man, even with his body, because his mind was yet free. See? And I've heard people say, oh, I couldn't live that way. And I've said it myself in the past. But you know what? If God puts you there, what choice have you got about it? They don't have any choice in this. This is all set up by God. So when it happens, you have to learn to adjust, adapt to it, and don't become a fossil. We're not talking about just getting old. Fossils are things that's dead and found embedded in the rocks of the earth. Don't get caught in that position. See? Know that God is love. He loves you. And everything He gives you is for your benefit. He's already perfect. We're the ones that need to change Him. Right? The way it is. And see, know that He's already done everything. All you've got to do is believe exactly what He's told you. How did Abraham become the child? He believed God. He was the son of God because he believed what God said. Not believe that there is a God, but believe what God said. Now tell me something. How are you going to believe what God said if you don't know what this book says? What's the answer to that one? You can't. Yeah. Right? But see, it's already in there, and that, in this book is a witness that you get that the truth of it's already planted in your heart. So the only way you're going to know what God said is, and agree with it, is find out what this book says. Not the literal letters on the page, but by what the Spirit is teaching you in your heart as you read this thing. Okay? I'm done today. You sure can. You can ask all you want.